is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
Oh, did you forget who you were for a second there?
No, I was looking at comic books and not ready is what it was.
I mean, I understand that because we have so many comic books to talk about today. I'm very excited. Huge stack to get into.
Also, Justin died.
Yeah, which is, you know, sad, but we took
him. Show must go on is his last words.
Well, I was going to explain what happened to him. We pulped him and we turned him into a comic book. So that's available now at your local stand. It's not a very good story, though. But we are going to talk about a bunch of books that do have really good stories, a bunch of them that are out today, a couple of more advanced reviews looking down the road. Let's kick it off. I want to talk about both of these issues at the same time.
What?
Well, we can talk about them separately if you want, but I think it's good to talk about them together. Aquaman number 42 and Justice League number 12.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Which makes sense.
I believe, third and fourth part of the Drowned Earth storyline. Now, if you haven't been picking them up, the idea is these three gods have returned to Earth, teamed up with the Injustice League, flooded the entire Earth. If the water touches you, you turn into some sort of fish beast. The Justice League, of course, is fighting back at them. Another little cliffhanger that we were left on is Aquaman got stabbed through the gut by Poseidon. So big stuff going down towards the end of the last issue of Justice League. Aquaman veers off and then pivots right back into what's going on with Justice League 12. We have one issue left in the storyline. Pete, you're raising your hand. What's going on?
I have a question. So when they have these big arcs, I struggle with knowing which comic to read first. Mm. I basically have to open it up a little bit and read it and be like, oh, I probably should read the other one first.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a kind of like steadfast rule, like when it comes to this, you read the main one first and then how do we know?
So I would say this is just, I think it varies by storyline. In this case, the cover of Aquaman number 42 says Drowned Earth Part 3 and Justice League number 12 says Drowned Earth Part 4. So generally speaking, I would read Part 3 before Part 4.
Cool,
but that's
it says
me.
It right on the cover?
Yeah, just right on the cover, Pete. But I guess
just saw a tie-in and I don't see where it says part four on
Does it just say it's not actually?
All right. So there is validity to my question.
Okay.
You complete pompous ass.
Here's what I will say about it is Marvel, frankly, is a lot better at that than DC, in my opinion. Marvel tends to put the part numbers or has a note in their recap page where they say, read this before you read this. Sometimes it's a little too late by that point because the recap comes in the middle of the issue. But DC often, because they don't have the recap page, just throws you into the middle of things.
Yeah.
In this case, read Aquaman 42 before you read the issue of Justice
Good
League.
Advice.
I think that's the order to read them in. I actually read them opposite, and I was like, oh, missed what happened to Aquaman. All right. Going to go back and read that.
Yeah.
So after all that making fun of you, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
It's just weird. It's just weird that, like, it shouldn't be this hard, man. I want to give you my money. I want to read comics. Like, why is this harder than it needs to be?
I don't understand why Aquaman 42 being the third part slash a tie-in of a Drowned Earth comic that also crosses over with Justice League, which ends in a special that is in neither of those books called Aquaman slash Justice League Drowned Earth number one, which is, of course, different from the first issue, which was Justice League slash Aquaman number one, Drowned Earth number one. I don't understand why that's so confusing.
Yeah, I guess it's just
very straightforward.
Yeah, I guess it's just my problem. I'm sorry that I brought this upon.
It's okay. Comics are for everybody.
They sure are.
Yeah. I will say, we were talking about this a little bit in our Patreon Slack, but part of the reason that I usually...
Wait, is this your sex Slack or is this different?
Don't crossover jokes that we made on the live show, dude. The thing that we were talking about when we pick stuff for the stack, mm-hmm. I really try to err towards first issues because obviously, but it's a good entry point for people. Like when you're reviewing things, it's good to know, should I jump into this? Should I get into this? Or we err towards big things or things that we're excited about.
You also do a good job of like picking out books that, we don't normally talk about. You try to have a rotation. I mean, there are favorites and there are big events, you know, with both Marvel and DC that we try to be a part of, but like also we try to mix it up, you know?
Right. And the reason that I bring this up now is, to your point, it is very difficult to get into these things. This is a great, super fun storyline. I really like both of these issues.
Me too.
To talk about them specifically, I think the Aquaman issue really delves into Aquaman's character and his history in a nice way. It's very well written. It's one of my favorite issues of Aquaman I've read in a really long time. Mm-hmm. Very emotional at points too.
Yeah.
And I, again, don't get very emotionally attached to Aquaman, so that I was touched by this issue, I think, hopefully says something. Meanwhile, Justice League is just... whatever Scott Snyder learned writing Metal, he is bringing to this arc here, because the stuff that happens, particularly the fights with Batman, are hardcore, and it's great. That said, it's not something you can just jump into, let alone the numbering, let alone anything else. And it's rough. It's rough to do that. I think that's why, frankly, a lot of fans wait for the trade or err towards the trade, because you will be able to pick this up and trade, read a complete story, while right now going into a comic book shop, it's confusing.
And also, I wonder if we're eventually going to get to a place where single issues aren't worth it, like if it's just going to be trades. I hope not.
Yeah, but I don't know. I've been pushing for that for 13 years at this point, however long we've been doing the show. Yeah. But that I think...
I've been railing against it as much as possible.
This is your fault, dude.
It's not my fault.
It's your fault.
No. I'm trying to keep the single issue alive.
Well, here's something you guys should know, is every year Pete has a creative summit with the heads of all the major comic book companies, and he lays out what they're going to do over the course of next year. And every year they're like, can we please just move over to graphic novels? And Pete's like, no.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
But I would like to say, the art in Justice League alone is worth picking this up. It is so fantastic and amazing. And that last page is just so enjoyable.
This is just a fun, big crossover, and I'm really having a blast reading it.
And that's the thing. It's like, if we're going to have a crossover event, make it huge, make it a lot of fun. I just wish it was easier to follow what to pick up when. But other than that, I'm having a great time with both comics.
Well, let's move over to another crossover event issue. This is from Marvel, Web of Venom, Carnage Board number one.
Yes.
Now, Donny Cates is writing the main Venom title. That is big, huge storytelling that's going on there. He's also been doing these one-shots called Web of Venom that give us a little more insight into what's going on in the world of Venom. This one, as you can guess from the title, shows us what's been going on with Carnage. He has gone through some crazy reinventions. He lost his legs. He lost his jaw, I believe. He died a bunch of times. He got turned
into...
There's
also a big dragon thing going on.
Well, that's a separate thing entirely, though it does tie into this issue.
Yeah, it does.
And Carnage was then sent into space after he became poison,
yep.
I guess.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff going on. So a good portion of this, without spoiling anything, I think you could figure this out. This is about bringing Carnage back to his status quo as the craziest motherfucker of the Marvel Universe. You know I don't love Venom stuff, right?
You don't, no.
This is a lot of fun.
Hey!
This issue... The thing that I like with Carnage here is...
Wait. I know what you're going to say.
What?
We've been working together for so long. I know exactly. You're going to say that you love giant flaming dragons. That's exactly what you were going to say.
Oh, no. What I was actually going to say is... One of my big issues with Venom is, and I know this is me being a stickler for stuff that happened back in the day, but Venom was introduced, and everybody knows this, but Venom was introduced as the dark Spider-Man, right? Like, he was the evil Spider-Man,
yep.
And he was supposed to be, even more than the Green Goblin, the worst villain that Spider-Man ever faced.
Right.
The problem was he became too popular. Everybody loved Venom, and
classic.
They had to make him into an anti-hero. They had to figure out a way to work him into more storylines, and I feel like that diffused a lot of the power of him. So then, because Venom was an anti-hero, they were like, oh, okay, there's
Carnage,
even worse Venom. Let's introduce him.
Turn it up to 11.
Exactly. But then Carnage became super popular, and they also made him into this kind of weird anti-hero. So what I appreciated about this issue was knowing the place that we're in Venom, and I know we're not going to go backwards with Venom, at least bringing Carnage back to the place that he is going to be the worst villain that Venom possibly could face. That's awesome. I love that. I'm very happy about that.
Last panel was just such a, like, oh, it was fun on so many levels.
Well,
it's an homage to all the kind of stuff before it as well.
There was a story a couple of people told about when Dottie pitched the idea for Venom to the Marvel retreat. He sat in the room and they said it was one of the longest pitches that they've ever gotten, but everybody was blown away by how awesome and how thought out and how big the story was. And we've gotten a sense of that at the beginning. We're like, wow, he introduced the God of the Symbiotes, but that storyline seems to, at least the first part of it, was wrapped up in the first arc. We're still going to get hints of it. We're still getting teases of it. But what's really exciting about this issue on that last page, which I don't want to spoil, is it points to how big this storyline is going to get. That's very exciting.
It's very exciting. I also love the idea of, like, the fact that a writer has to be passionate enough about his story arc that he has to pitch it in front of a room full of people to get them on board and okay it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's not just being like, hey, Gates, you want to write this thing? All right, cool. You know what I mean? Like, he's saying, like, this is a story I want to tell. This is how I want to tell it. And that's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, when I was working at MTV Geek, we were a fly on the wall for some of those retreats.
Oh, man.
I can't tell you any of the specific stuff that happened in there because I signed NDAs and stuff, but it really is that. Like, it's the, somebody will say, okay, here's my pitch for X-Force, mm-hmm. and then proceed to talk through the entire storyline for half an hour, and then everybody sits there, every single other major Marvel writer and editor, and pokes holes in the story. And they have to answer questions about the story and know everything about the story. And it changes a lot in that room. There's a lot of stories that I saw eventually come out that were totally different than what were pitched there because of the rigorous vetting that went on from that group.
Well, that's great. That's important. And that's cool to know that that's part of the process, because it should have to go through a bunch before it gets made, so that it you know, people have thought about it enough where it can't just get torn apart like people like you and me were like, this is bullshit, why would they make this? You know?
Well, I think fans view things as that a lot.
Oh,
they
yeah.
look at it as like, what if we did this thing? I'm not doing a terrible fan voice and being kind of insulting right now, but a lot of the poorer fans, I think, the fans that are not really fans, often look at stories that are like, they don't think a lot of thought went into it. They're just like, they think the editors and the writers are just kind of tossing things in there for sales or whatever. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of thoughts and a lot of vetting that goes into these things. Like anything, a lot of times they go in the wrong direction or they do the wrong thing anyway, because that's how things work. But it's not like there isn't the time and the amount of energy spent on them.
Yeah.
All right, there we go. Moving on to an Image book. This is an original creation from Scotty Young, Middle West, number one. And this is an interesting story. I think Scotty Young is really stretching himself as a storyteller. This is very different from I Hate Fairyland, if you read that, or his Deadpool run, or any of the, what was the other one? Bully Wars? Is that the book that's coming out from him as well?
Yeah.
This is simultaneously a smaller and bigger story, I think.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Thanks. It's a little quieter. It's about a boy who lives in the Midwest.
Dude.
There's slowly some weird magical things that get worked in there. Some very sad, very emotional things. What'd you think about it, Pete?
This was a very powerful book. It reminds me a little bit of I Kill Giants and the fact of it's like a perspective piece from the point of view of this kid and how he perceives things. And how kids deal with issues that are hard, and it's heartbreaking, but really powerful. And I love it. I absolutely love it. I also hate it at the same time because of the stuff it deals with. It makes me so mad. But I really appreciate the time and effort that was put into this comic, and I think it's definitely a must pickup.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes from here, because it feels relatively complete while it seems like there's also a lot of the world to explore at the end there. I don't really have a sense of what the arc of the book is yet, where it's going to go, what's going to happen. There's a little bit of back matter from Scotty Young where he talks about the inspiration of the idea. It seems to have grown a lot from there. But like you said, it's very well drawn. It's very well written. It's emotional. It's a very different sort of story, which I like quite a bit.
Yeah.
All right. Here's one that you're probably a little more familiar with from Oni Press. Rick and Morty presents Pickle Rick.
I'm really surprised you didn't go Middle West into East West. I mean, I felt like there was a natural...
I wanted to space out the Wests of Wests.
Okay, all right.
We'll get there. No spoilers. We might be talking about East of West in a second. But let's talk about Pickle Rick instead.
Yeah. Rick the Pickle.
Yes.
As he likes to go by in this comic, which kind of drove me insane a little bit.
Are you... I feel like we've talked about this before. Are you a fan of Rick and Morty, Pete?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay, so you've seen the Pickle Rick episode?
Yes, I have.
Arguably one of the more toxic episodes of television that's ever existed.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great. It's hilarious, but it's one of those things that's been embraced by the Rick and Morty fandom and taken to some horrible places. What's really interesting about this particular issue is it takes the beginning of the Pickle Rick episode and then spins it off in different directions.
Yep.
And shows us...
But it also deals with continuity from that episode. And, like, it doesn't ignore everything and just goes off. It, like, makes different choices along the way.
Right. It's like an AU version of the Pickle Rick episode.
It's a what if almost.
Right, which broke my brain a little bit once that started to happen.
I wanted to go back and watch the original episode because it's like, wait a second.
Right. Yeah. And it veers off so slowly that you're like, okay, maybe I just forgot that scene. Yeah. Okay, what's happening now?
Yeah, you're like, wait, no, this is completely different. Yeah, yeah.
But it's really funny and it channels the voices very well. The scenes that it does add are a lot of fun. The best part about it is it peppers these ads throughout the issue, which feel very much of a piece of those Rick and Morty, I'm forgetting what it is, the ones where they switch through TV.
Yeah, where they're switching channels.
Yeah, exactly. It feels very much like that, and they're ridiculously raunchy. They're very transgressive, but it works really well. And we talked about a previous Rick and Morty one-shot, the one with Sleepy Gary.
Yeah.
These are good, these one-shots. I like them.
It's interesting because I really struggled with the fact of, like, could you just pick this up and read it? Or is it better to know the episode? Because it kind of hurts my brain when you know the episode because I was fighting it a little bit. But I always was like, what's better, to have just read it fresh and not know the Pickle Rick episode, or to kind of know it and appreciate the fact that it did nuanced stuff within the...
That's an interesting question. Yeah. I think it's better to know the episode, honestly, because that episode is super deep in terms of what it has to say about Rick's family.
Yeah.
And it really delves in there. This one does too.
But I also love the fact that, like, it kind of feeds both beasts a little bit, where it's really talking about deep and powerful stuff, and at the same time having some of the best over-the-top ridiculous action sequences of all time.
All time?
Well, in Pickle Rick's world. Okay. Yeah.
All right. I was going to say Die Hard's pretty good.
Yeah, but this kind of channels
RoboCop, that's a great action movie.
It's all kind of channeling
to that. Say it's one of the best action sequences of all time is insane, Pete. I'm
talking about in the realm of Pickle Rick. Or in the realm of Rick
and
Morty.
Pickle Rick.
Yeah.
Pickle Rick. Right?
If you want to be Pickle Rick, dude, you go right ahead.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Moving it back to Marvel comic books, Uncanny X-Men number 2, continuing the weekly adventure through the world of the X-Men. Excuse me so much. Pete, I can't remember what you thought about the first issue. You really liked it a lot,
right?
Really
loved it.
Yeah, so how'd you feel about this one?
Well, first you got to ask yourself an important question. Do you like dinosaurs?
I do.
Well, then this
issue... Big fan of Jurassic Park 3.
This issue is for you, sir.
JP3!
I felt like this is doing a really fun job of playing with stuff in a way that I think is... great. I didn't enjoy it as much as the first issue, but I really still had a lot of fun with this issue.
Oh, really? I thought this one was more fun, honestly. There was all the stuff with the dinosaur fighting, the stuff that happens with multiple...
You're a sucker for dinosaur fights,
though. What are you doing? What are you doing right now, Pete? I love the stuff with the multiple man. I know we talked about that the last issue. For those of you who didn't
great
pick it up...
Great use of the art with, like, multiple man, like,
great.
Showing the, like, a... above, like kind of looking down at all the multiple men. It was pretty awesome.
So as usual with the X-Men, a lot of bad shit is going down simultaneously and they have to deal with multiple things at the same time. This issue, they're being superheroes. They're trying to figure out what's wrong with Multiple Man. He's just growing out of control. Also, a little bit of a spoiler here, but he seems to be gaining powers, which was something that kind of happened to us, sort of teased in the previous Multiple Man run. So that seems to be showing up here again. There's a real fun return at the end of the issue.
Oh.
But overall, this is great.
I also really love the Laura moment where it was like, wait for it. And, oh, just so
it's
great.
This is the most I've enjoyed X-Men in a very long time, to be honest. Not that there hasn't been X-Men stuff that's happened that I have enjoyed. I have. But this is so good and such a fun start. And I'm super, super into it and excited to see where they go.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see. I think they're doing a really great job on this team with this. And I'm very excited that there is some dependable X-Men comics coming out.
Moving over to Boom Studios, Smooth Criminals number one.
Smooth Criminal.
Yep, this is not an adaptation of the Michael Jackson song.
No.
This is about a girl who's a little bit on the outskirts of society who may discover something a little weird going on. Specifically, it seems like, at least for the first issue, this is going to get spoilers halfway through, a time traveler, right, Pete?
Yeah.
How'd you feel about this issue?
First off, I really love the art. They did a great job of setting up the world. We understood what was going on, was at stakes in the beginning. Fun opening, and then great kind of reveal of the team up of these two characters.
By the way, I just want to mention I'm watching Pete flip through the issue right now. So you're basically laying down a commentary track is what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. I think this is, it also lets us at the end kind of we saw kind of like, oh, God, there's got to be ramifications for the choices they made. Yeah, I think this is a solid first issue, solid art, kind of setting up this fun world.
And it didn't blow me away. I think it has a pattern that we've seen a lot lately, which I don't think is a bad pattern, mind you, where it does take the first half of the issue to keep things normal. They're relatively normal in the first half of the issue, and then they start to get weird in the second half of the issue. And that's obviously a good way of establishing the characters, but particularly with the first issue, I want to be blown away a little bit more, and this is a slightly slower start. I don't think that's a bad thing by any means, but I want more razzmatazz, you know what I mean?
Well, I kind of disagree. I really like the way the character, because you think it's just like, oh, this is just a common schleb who, you know, has trouble with the world and, like, you know, getting along, and maybe this adventure will turn their life around. It shows her in a more powerful part in the second half where she's kind of controlling things a little bit from her laptop. And I think that I like that choice, and I feel like this isn't like her changing. It's a little bit about her opening up and sharing her talents a little bit. And I think that's cool.
As a counterpoint, razzmatazz.
Sure.
All right. Sure. Moving on to an advanced review. This is coming out November 28th from Dark Horse.
Don't spoil anything.
Thanks, Pete. I always do that. Stranger Things number 3. This is continuing the story of what happened to Will in the Upside Down the rest of the first season of Stranger Things was going on. We really like the first issue of this. Checking in with the third issue here. Now, what did you think? Is it holding up the quality?
I definitely think so. And I feel like when you're going to do a comic about a property that we know so much about, this is the type of thing. Like, give us the in-between stuff. Let me see something. It's kind of must-see comics, and I very much enjoy that.
Yeah, I thought this issue was scarier than the first one.
Oh, yeah.
And the second one, too. The tough thing about not spoiling this is you kind of know what happened. If you've seen Stranger Things, you know, at least from the opposite perspective, from the outside world, from the regular world versus the upside down world. But this is filling in some of those holes there, giving you the other side of the dialogue that you heard, which is pretty neat. Mm-hmm. It works as a story.
I wonder if it syncs up, like if you hit play on the show and then like read the comic at certain points.
Sure. Anything syncs up if you do it at the same time.
Well, I just think that I wonder if the exact dialogue is there.
Yeah, I believe so.
Wow.
If I remember correctly, I haven't necessarily gone back and checked, but I have to assume it is.
I would hope so.
They are, I know this from experience, they are very protective of Stranger Things as a property. Netflix.
They should be.
Yeah. I know this because I tried to produce my own Stranger Things ice cream. You served it upside down. Didn't take off.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry.
Anyway, pick this up when this comes out. Moving over to Image, hotly anticipated East of West, number 40. Now, if you love Middle West, East of West.
Oh, man.
So, for those of you who haven't been keeping up with East of West, I don't know if this is true, but it feels like maybe we're entering the end game on this series. I'm not 100% sure because I'm never 100% sure what's going on here, but if you haven't picked up the book, we've really focused in on the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and particularly Death has been traveling with his son, who is destined to be Babylon, the destroyer of the world. The other three horsemen hate Death, want to literally kill Death and take over Babylon and use him, bring him to his purpose. And that's what we've been building up to the whole series. So I have to imagine we're heading towards the last couple of issues here. But again, who knows? It could go off in any direction. Regardless, this is so good. This title is always so good. The art is beautiful. But particularly the last issue of this issue have really drilled down and focused on a tighter series of characters, made it more emotional, particularly with Death, because essentially, he's been the protagonist of the series. I thought this was great.
I really love this issue. Sometimes I get lost in this, East and West. I mean, Hickman writes very dank. There's a lot of dense stuff to his writing. There's more than meets the eye, if you will. And sometimes he loses me. But I'm very happy kind of things slow down in this issue, and we kind of stayed with one thing for a little bit, and I was able to follow and very much enjoy. This is a really vast, impressive book that kind of really screws into kind of one character here and focuses on how fucked up Death is and like all the stuff going on with him. And I thought this was a really badass, amazing issue.
And if you go on Imgur, Jonathan Hickman has one of the dankest collections of memes on the internet. It's super sweet. It's nuts. The stuff he does with The Office, I don't want to even get into it. I don't even want to talk about it.
It seems like you kind of do.
No, I don't want to talk about it.
What is that voice?
That's my dank meme voice.
That's your dank meme
voice?
I don't know.
Definitely pick up East and West, number 40. Move it back to Marvel. Marvel Knights, number 2. Now, the heroes of the Marvel Universe have forgotten who they are. We had a big reveal at the last issue. Looked like some of the worst villains were causing it to happen. But meanwhile, Bruce Banner and the Punisher have teamed up to try to wake up all the heroes of the Marvel Universe, starting with Daredevil. And the big cliffhanger that we found out with Daredevil is it seems like Karen Page is alive. That's where we pick up this issue. We really like the first issue a lot, I think. It was not what we expected at all, but it was definitely very interesting. Do you feel like this followed up appropriately?
Yes, I do. Now, this isn't like Baywatch and Baywatch Nights, where it's just a time difference, same great kind of cast. This is a completely different scenario where this world, like superheroes don't exist or don't know that they exist. They've forgotten their roots a little bit. So this issue really gets into them kind of rediscovering who they are. And it's weird to see Punisher just being a cop. But by the end of the issue, we're really kind of they're getting back into the people we know and love. So this was a really fantastic, exciting issue. I also really love the art. This is such a fun book where the art is a little different, so it can give you a setup of a different kind of world, and you don't feel too lost. I think this is really fun kind of event, and I can't wait for more.
The other thing that I really liked about this thematically is it dealt with the idea of why would you want to go back to your life as a superhero because it was bad. Specifically, they talk about that with the Punisher. They talk about it with Elektra, who they try to wake up this issue. Mm-hmm. The Punisher is having these conflicting memories of he goes to bed next to his wife and gets up because he's mourning the loss of his family. And it's a very real idea of if his memory was wiped, obviously that's not him. But at the same time, he has his family back. So isn't that what he wants? Why would he care? Yeah. I like that conflict. It gives it a lot of meaty, emotional stuff to work with in this issue. And I think it's real good.
I also liked how... because Electro Nachos is a fucking badass. And I feel like they really, you really get the sense of that in this comic.
You definitely do. Every time I hear her full name, I think of Electric Nachos. I don't know what they are, but I want to eat them. That's all
no,
I'm saying.
No, you shouldn't. They're electric.
No. They're you not like, shocked. It's like a name. It's like, they're probably super spicy. It feels like your mouth's being electrocuted because they're so spicy.
I don't want that.
Ooh, Electric Nachos. Get them with your dankest memes. All right, moving on to American Carnage number one, a new title from Vertigo. This is a really interesting book, I thought, particularly because it takes a little while to come around to exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I know that's a completely conflicting what I said earlier about that other title, but this one does throw you into the mix very early, explains that some terrible things have been going on, and a ex-agent, I guess, gets sent undercover to investigate what seems to be like maybe a cult or a religious organization or something like that to find out what's going on. I thought this was really fascinating and went in directions I was not expecting. How do you feel about it, Pete?
I really like what they're trying to do here. It's impressive. I mean, it's dealing with a lot of hard issues. You know, the rise of all the kind of like Nazi groups in America and dealing with racism and like...
And you love reading about that. That's one of your favorite things.
Definitely. I mean, it's making some choices and you're sitting in it and, you know, I got to tip my hat to it. It's powerful stuff. It's, you know, it's... I'm very interested to see where this goes. I'm completely on board after this issue.
It feels like vintage Vertigo. It feels like it's not anything like this in terms of subject matter, but it feels in line with Scalped to me in particular, where it is starting to build out this world that we don't know too much about. We'll see how much it builds it out after that. But the characters are well realized. It's very well written. Should be cool.
And scary as fuck, dude.
It is scary as fuck. Next one to talk about, the Image Comics book, The New...
Damn, how many more are there?
It was so many. Yeah. We're going to keep going. We're reviewing every title that came out, Pete. We're going to die on this podcast. The New World number 5 from Image Comics, which I'm going to take a random stab and say was the last issue of this title. 100% sure about that. We really liked this book when it started a lot.
Yes.
It was sort of a mix between Running Man and Romeo and Juliet, I would have to say, where this lady who is one of the greatest cops slash killers of this post-apocalyptic world falls in love with a fugitive. The art by Trad Moore, who you probably know from the Luther Strode books, is awesome.
It's worth
so
it
good.
For the art alone.
Yes, Alice Cott is writing. It seemed very, no insult to his previous stuff, but more focused, more accessible than a lot of the other things that he had been writing. This issue definitely blows things out quite a bit, gets very esoteric, gets very heady and arty towards the end there.
Also dealing with the border wall.
Yeah. So, but what did you think about it? How do you think it wrapped up?
This was very beautiful, powerful, imaginative. I think this was really cool and a fantastic issue. I was really impressed with this because at first we were like, what the fuck? This is so crazy, but it really settles into its own. And it takes you on a fantastic journey. I love it. I think I can't say enough. The art alone is worth it.
Tradmore's art is huge, and I would buy any title just for his art. I was surprised how this ended because, like I said, there was so much thought put into the world and so much world building that went on at the beginning that it ended in this really beautiful, very emotional way, but that it didn't end this world necessarily was surprising for me. Not necessarily in a bad way, but I want to spend more time in this world. I want to see more from this world. And then half the issue was taken up with the emotional thrust of these two characters. didn't give me that, but I think that's okay still.
Yeah.
It's definitely a great showcase for Trad Moore. Moving on, we got one more book, Pete. Just one more book, and then we're going to wrap up.
I don't believe you.
This is, I believe it, it's true. This is another advance review, not coming out until December 12th from Dark Horse. No spoilers. I know I do that all the time. That's definitely me and not you. Black Hammer Cthulhuese number one. So for those of you who haven't been picking up these books, and you absolutely should, because they're going to be potentially one of the new big movie TV worlds. They just got optioned by, I believe, New Line, maybe, or Universal. I'm not 100% sure. We should look into that. But it started out about being about a group of heroes, almost like a old school, old vigilante group of heroes, or just golden age heroes, lost their memories for some reason, are all living on a farm together, and they can't leave. They're all sort of riffs on the Justice League. Not exactly. They still feel like their own original characters. And the initial mystery of the book is what happened to them? How did they end up there? What's going? But over time, Jeff Lemire has blown it out exponentially. He's now exploring the future in the quantum age. He's had a one-shot series that focus on all the different characters. It's very much feeling like the Mignola-verse spitting out of Hellboy in terms of scope of what's going on there. And this is focusing on one character, Cthulhuese, who's basically a little girl with a Cthulhu head. I love this issue. I thought this was great and emotional and dark and really well done. How'd you feel about it, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, it's very cool how this all started, like how this all kind of started with this farm and kind of branched out. I think this was fantastic issue. And what was nice is, like, it's one of those things where, like, you kind of see the end coming a little bit, but you're so happy with the way it turns out that it's just so enjoyable. Beautiful art, very cool. I was very happy with it.
Yeah, me too. The other thing that I really like about the Black Hammer universe is it doesn't shy away from more human things happening, more realistic things happening, without it delving into grim darkness that usually denotes a more realistic take on a superhero universe. This is a great one shot. Even if you haven't been reading any Black Hammer stuff, if you
you can just pick this up and read it.
Absolutely. If you like weird Cthulhu Lovecraftian things, if you like kind of superhero stories or darker horror stories, definitely pick this up.
Now, let me ask you, if you wake up on a farm that you can't leave, what's the first thing you do?
Milk a cow.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Always wanted to milk a cow. What about you, Pete?
I'd murder everybody.
Oh, my God. All right. Never wake up on a farm. If you'd like to support this show and other shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater in New York. It's totally free. Come on by. We will review even more comic books in your face. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live, or check out our website, comicbookclublive.com, for this podcast and many more. And we'll see you at the Comic Book Shop.